Hello there. If you're thinking of buying a property in Ireland, but perhaps you haven't been to Ireland yet, or perhaps you don't know anyone or many people in Ireland, today's podcast and interview should give you a lot of hope, because today I'm talking to a lovely client of mine, Colleen, who, when I met her and collected her from the Merrion Hotel in Dublin with a view to starting our search, Colleen had actually never been to Ireland and she didn't know anyone in Ireland. So in today's episode and interview, we chat through the search process, some of the houses we ruled out. We talk to Colleen about her first few months in the property, how she's got on, and how she settled into a village where, to start with, she knew nobody. So for anyone thinking of buying in Ireland, I think you'll find this a very encouraging sort of a chat. And as always, my thanks to Colleen for being game to share her story. So I look forward to it and I hope you enjoy it. Hello there. I'm here with my lovely client, Colleen, and we're sitting in her elegant Georgian drawing room looking down at the River Barrow. And what I'd love to do, Colleen, is just to talk about the journey from wherever you were to here. So at some point, Colleen, you were in the United States thinking about something.
I was, in fact, in the United States for many, many years, reflecting on how much I had enjoyed living in Europe when I lived here at some point in my professional life. Events brought me to Copenhagen last fall, and I was there quite a bit longer than I thought I would be. And I thought, well, this is an opportunity to think about this upcoming move. Can I do it? And I actually found that process quite difficult to consider seriously. It's one thing to have a fantasy about leaving the country, my country, the place I was born. It's altogether different when you get serious about it. So I decided to use the process of talking to immigration lawyers as a way to make it more real and get the information I needed to get to find out what was possible. The conversation with the people in Denmark was very short.
So you had thought about moving to Denmark?
I love Copenhagen and have ties there. So yeah, no, that was just no.
Okay.
It was a very short call. I looked at Malta, and the objective ultimately being to be in the EU. The long and short of it is that Ireland emerged as a leading candidate. And while I have an affinity for Ireland, I had not been to Ireland. And that brought me to your good self. I looked at the online website for property in Ireland, which is daf.ie. And found a handful of properties and then started that process with them. Because then after I talked to all the immigration attorneys, because I was quite serious about leaving the U.S., I still wasn't resolved to move. And so I turned to online real estate as the next level of way to get me over the hump of really leaving my country, because I love houses and I live in my houses.
Yes.
It's the house itself that brings me joy. And to back up a step, the reason I was thinking about leaving, there were two sort of push me, pull me thing going on. I wanted to be closer to Europe, to be closer to my adult children who mm-hmm. live here. And I want to be a little bit delicate about how I say this, but I was increasingly uncomfortable with the climate I found myself in with regard to my physical safety where I was living. There were a number of natural and ecosystem hazards mm-hmm. that were growing more and more difficult for me to tolerate.
Right.
I didn't feel safe.
Okay. So you're not the only American client I've had, actually, who's considered their safety, both actually physical in terms of the sea and the winds, etc., but also the political climate. They felt, you know, if this continues one more degree in the direction that it's going, they're going to consider a move.
If we're going to be that candid, I will say this. I found, and this is overly dramatic, but I did find myself wondering about people in Germany and Austria in the 20s who decided to leave and at a much higher cost. I mean, there was no internet. There was no, every possible tie that they were leaving were severed. You know, there wasn't a way to stay and, you know, I could pick up the phone and call family and Zoom and all these other things, but to leave. So what was it they saw or sensed, or what was that threshold for them where they felt like they needed to get out? And I had crossed that threshold.
Sure.
Already.
So in terms of the search in Ireland, you had done enough research to know the website to look at to find houses.
Right.
And by the time you got in touch with me, am I right in thinking you'd actually looked at a few houses online and maybe made contact with a few agents, or had you not? Can you remember?
I had made a contact or two and mistakenly thought that I would be able to handle the entire transaction on my own, and that whoever this Breffni person was, she could just probably be some sort of handy consultant, was wildly overconfident. I did not understand what I do understand to be the case with real estate transactions in Ireland at that time. And I found out in short order that I needed professional assistance and everything was going to work a lot better. And I had no idea what a great partnership this was going to be. And I just remain, as you know, incredibly grateful to have met you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'd have to say it's totally mutual. So I was in the office one day and I got a call, actually. And that's not usual. I usually get emails from people, or maybe someone's filled out a contact form on my website. But in fact, I got a call from you, Colleen, to say I'm thinking about this and I'm need maybe some help. And after that, you weren't sure you needed a full buyer's agent at that point. And what I did after that was I sent you a few resources, a few step-by-step guides, et cetera, for you to have a look at. And then I think you maybe had a go at doing it a little bit on your own. And then you came back and said, no, actually, I think I'm going to benefit from working with you.
Yeah.
So to fast forward then, I was sitting outside the Merrion Hotel in Dublin going to collect Colleen. And we were going to have a day or two of viewings. And the viewings we had set up as a result of you and I having a couple of Zoom calls while you were in the States and I was in Ireland. And you were telling me roughly the kind of things that were important to you. And one of the things that was emerging was that it would have separate guest quarters for someone else to live in, maybe a caretaker or something like that. And I got the sense from talking to you that it was going to be quite an intuitive experience rather than a checklist experience. And in fact, I think it usually is quite an intuitive experience. Some people present with a checklist and others present with an urge. But no matter where we start, we usually finish working with our hearts and our intuition and feeling our way into the place.
Right.
So when we went off on our travels that first day, the properties we had shortlisted, I think there were about four or five we saw on the first day. Mm-hmm. I had phoned up the agents. I had checked they were roughly within budget. I had checked they roughly met the guest quarter criteria, that they had some degree of charm, some degree of livability, because while you may have been open to doing some work, you definitely didn't want a renovation project and you didn't want a huge project.
Right.
So it was very interesting looking at properties together, I think, Colleen, because it was like a tuning process, wasn't it?
Exactly.
I got to see how you were looking at things and you got to see how I was looking at things.
Right.
And I think it's fair to say that the first day of viewings, we figured out what wasn't going to work, didn't we?
Yes.
So the first house we ruled out on the grounds that it had really no character at all. I remember it was a modern house. It had guest accommodation. It was near Enniscorthy. And it was just too close to the road. You mightn't remember that at all.
Oh, I do
remember
that house.
It had been used as a guest house. And
yeah,
it just, nothing about it, really. There was no sense of peace when you got there.
Right.
It was sort of a house you kept traveling in. The road was busy enough outside.
Right.
Nothing about the whole site really felt right.
Right.
Then we went to see another house that had guest separate house. It was basically two houses on one stretch of land.
I remember that.
And it was in a bit of a dip and it was quite wooded.
And damp.
And damp.
Yeah.
And quite dark.
Yeah.
And I think we both got there and felt
no.
No.
It was an interesting house. It was well worth seeing. I liked all the nooks and crannies and the charm factor, but
yeah,
no, it didn't
But
work.
When we physically got out of the car and felt the place and we said, no, it's dark and damp, and no.
Yeah.
Then we went on to another house, which was up the mountains, quite on the way back to Dublin. It was like a cottage, a very charming old cottage that an artist was living in. It was quite spread out and... Again, it was a nice location. It was up. The site was well up in its land, but we ruled that out because the house was really a bit of a wreck. Even though the photographs looked good, you could see everything about it was not to spec. The spiral staircase didn't feel safe. The room ceiling heights were really a bit low. All of the land was a little bit damp, and it didn't feel right. So... that was our first day, where we were kind of tuning in to the land, to each other, to how, what was going to make it work for you. And it was a useful day, but none of those ones were correct.
Right.
So day two, we set off and we head down to Gregnamanna, and we're looking at a beautiful double-fronted house on 15 acres. So you tell me what you saw when we were approached this house.
Oh my gosh. It's a, I mean, I'm so sentimental about it. I'm almost tearful. I mean, I was swept away. I was astonished. I still, when I drive up the driveway, think, I still am astonished that I get to live here. When we drove up the lane to the house, I thought, oh, this is too good to be true. This can't possibly be something that's in my price range and that it doesn't have a, you know, water running visibly down through the middle of the house or something. And in fact, we found this charming house with a somewhat recently replaced and utterly, completely restored from the rafters up ceiling, which is everything with these old houses.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, you know, 17 acres of grounds and a forested bit in the back where it provides us with all sorts of things, including badgers. There's a badger den back there that's been there for hundreds of years. They keep them forever, apparently. It was just jaw-dropping charm. And what was, which you see a lot of in Ireland, but what this place had also was that it had been meticulously maintained over the centuries by the people who had owned it. People had put in a lot of time, effort, and money into quite unsexy renovations, needful things,
yes.
Plumbing and electricity and roofs, and pointing the many, many, I don't know if they're miles, but many, 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 many unit of stone walls that are all over the place. That are quite, can be expensive to maintain. In fact, we just repaired one of the fences down here with my neighbors. So the house was in just tremendous condition, and all of the work that had been done preserved the original character of the house.
Mm. And the views over the river.
Brefni, one of the things that was so amazing about our process is that you really pushed me to articulate what I wanted and why. And I was sort of flinging myself a little bit into this process. Now, I'll know it when I see it, but you really asked me to articulate, and I really wanted to be close to water. And I find myself here at the edge of this beautiful, one of the Three Sisters rivers, which, as I look out the window of the drawing room we're sitting in right now, the light is glinting off the top of the river, and I know the people whose boats are down there parked at edge all the time. And it goes right through this bridge that was built in 1204, I think.
Gosh.
Blown up at one point and rebuilt in the 1770s. The house over is up on a hill, so it has this incredible outlook over the valley that we're in. So throughout the year, the mists settle in different parts of the valley depending on the prevailing weather of the time, and then, you know, lift off and are gone by 10 o'clock in the morning. So there's this constantly changing landscape of play of clouds and mists and rain and light on the land, which is very different. I lived in the Puget Sound for 30 years, and when the gray settled in there, it was permanent and for 10 to 12 months,
right.
Depending on the year, without much sort of character. But in Ireland, the wind blows enough the Atlantic, and so the clouds are always moving around. And And they're often sunny, clear, beautiful days, much more than I expected.
Isn't that great? It's nearly a full-time occupation looking at the weather. But, you know, when you mentioned there, Colleen, that you know who owns the boats down on the river, it brings me to a really key point of your story, which is that when I collected you from the Marion Hotel, you had never set foot in Ireland,
right,
and you did not know anyone in Ireland.
You were my best friend in Ireland.
That is extraordinary.
You know, it was a bit of a catapult. I mean, I know people approach these things differently. for me, it was I did catapult myself into this process, and it was very dependent on the house I found.
Mm-hmm.
If I was good, I really needed to feel safe and good and sort of in love with the house,
mm-hmm,
for the whole thing to work. The rest of what happened to me has just been unaccountably magical. The village that I live in has, they have been beyond welcoming. They've been eager to welcome me into their lives and their family and their homes. And when I walk down across, even though I'm on this sort of big piece of property, I'm just walking distance from the heart of the village. So I walk down, several times a week for butter and
mm-hmm
potatoes. And I'll always see, my friends, familiar mm-hmm faces. And each person I run into is a 5-minute conversation or longer. And maybe even we step inside for coffee or something. So there's this wonderful sense of that I have of mm-hmm connection in my new community that has happened faster than anywhere I've lived before.
Because as we're talking, you haven't even been a full year in this house.
I haven't even been here a full year.
So you've moved to Ireland without knowing a single person. Now you feel embedded in the community,
yeah,
and connected.
Deeply connected and cared for. I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
About, 3 or 4 weeks ago, the power went out at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I happened to have a house guest at the time. So we came into this beautiful room, this drawing room, built a big fire and opened a bottle of wine. And we
wonderful
were happy as pigs in mud.
Yeah.
I had no fewer than 4 phone calls and texts from friends around to check to see that I was okay and to offer to come pick me up and bring me to their homes or, just bring me whatever I needed. Do you need candles, love? That kind of thing. 4 different people checked on me. I was so touched by that. And mm-hmm that's, I'm moving to Dublin might be a different experience, but
mm-hmm
I've moved into the country
mm-hmm
and it's got what we would have in the past talked about small town American sort of values back when that meant something, maybe more something good. It's here and it's alive and it's an inextricable part of the DNA of this community. And I think mm-hmm all small villages in Ireland operate this way.
It's great to hear, but presumably, and it's now that we're on the far side of your story, when we met, you were in the States considering this move. Here we are, less than a year later, you are installed, embedded, connected, settled,
right,
and a little bit energized and inspired about
absolutely
the place you find yourself.
Yeah.
But presumably you had fears when you were considering moving.
The most difficult thing for me was because I was leaving the United States and moving. I was 64 years old at the time, and I was severing significant, at least setting up the conditions where I might no longer ever live in the United States, and I still feel that way. I have no desire to go back. So that was the motivation, but that decision was incredibly difficult and was inextricably linked to buying a house.
Mm-hmm.
The house is what pulled me over.
Right.
The difficulty for me was less the catapult, pulling the, releasing the catapult and shooting myself over here. What was hard?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, now I've done this. Now I've got to get there. When you were applying for immigration, there is no end of paperwork. There's an FBI background check, which is not as daunting as it sounds. There's medical paperwork. You have to go to the local sheriffs and county sheriff or the local police and have them attest that you are not a menace to society.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of documentation needs to be gathered and sent off. And that was just like all paper chases. It was annoying, at least for me. But what was the hardest part of the whole darn thing was shipping my furniture over here.
Oh.
That for me was and also the most onerous paperwork for me was associated with shipping my goods, which by the way showed up about four times faster than I had set in my mind that they would show up. So that, but the part for it was hard for me was arriving here, mm-hmm. and being alone in this great big house, mm-hmm. and getting the comforts I needed around me, mm-hmm. Getting my furniture here, getting the pantry stored with the things I wanted in my pantry, and sourcing my kind of goodies, mm-hmm. and my wine shop that mm-hmm. was going to be able to find what I wanted in the way of wines. That it was all the little feathering of the nest stuff that was stressful after yeah. I arrived. I made sure to schedule a lot of house guests in the first 6-7 months that I was here, because I just was uncertain and I wanted the comfort of friendly faces.
Sure.
And that turned out to be a great way to explore my new surroundings with friends and family who were eager to do so as well. And so, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I think sometimes if you are walking down the village on your own as the new person, you're not as likely to say, hello, I'm here, the new person. Whereas if you are walking down with your friend, you're more relaxed, you feel more sociable, and you're more likely to chat to the person. So having an ally nearly in exploring allows you kind of the bandwidth to relax a little bit and chat a bit more than you would if you were on your own feeling very lonely and alone.
Well, and I'll tell your listeners, I mean, if somebody buys a property adjacent to a village, I thought at first that so much of the warmth that was directed at me was because I was the flavor of the week and I was this American who'd bought this house and, you know. Mm-hmm.
The big house in the village.
Yeah, that people had grown up with all their lives. But I sold myself and I sold my community short. It was much more than that. But to stay with that point for a minute, in the first months I lived here, if I would always introduce myself to people. I'd say, oh, you're Colleen, you bought the house. And da-da-da-da-da, you know. They right away knew who I was and were eager to make my acquaintance. And but on the selling short side, the people are genuinely loving and embracing and welcoming and have brought me into their homes and into their families. I have multiple Thanksgiving dinner invitations, you know.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, I mean, not Thanksgiving, Christmas. Mm-hmm. I'm confused because they serve turkey at Christmas here. But yeah, I mean, people have been genuinely, genuinely welcoming.
So what advice would you give to anyone who's in your position, maybe on their own, let's just say particularly on their own, thinking of moving to Ireland as a move? What would you say if they're fearful?
That's such a good question. There are a couple of ways to tackle that. You can spend more time in the country. It doesn't have to be this catapulting thing that I did. Get to know people. I would say, as part of your process, subscribe to the Irish Times and the Independent. Read about the country. Try to find local businesses or things. Well, Breffni's website is stocked with this kind of resource information, so definitely spend time with Breffni's website. Familiarize yourself with the country and the culture and know a little bit about Michael Collins before you move here. And then read the biography. But also, what I have heard is from, I belong to a Facebook group, which is Americans in Ireland or something mm-hmm. like that. I've heard that it's different in Dublin. Mm-hmm. When people move into Dublin, it's a big city. And so people aren't quite so quick to connect. Mm-hmm. But then if you've got school age children, you know,
yes.
you have to find the book clubs. Mm-hmm. You've got to find the, you know, the bird watching groups mm-hmm. or whatever your fancy is.
Or the history or the walking or the sailing
yeah,
or the riding.
All of
or,
that. Yeah. Find your people and don't be afraid to join. And when you do, people are going to welcome you with open arms. Mm.
But I think your point about moving into a small village is a well-made point in that it's easier to assimilate into a small village because there is a network, there is an existing community there, whereas in the city, yes, there are communities, but they're harder to identify, whereas here it's the community because that's the news agent that you have to buy your paper in, that's the supermarket where that is the community. There's not a million of them, there's one,
yeah.
and everyone meets there.
One of the most frequently received pieces of advice I got when I moved here, it's kind of funny. And at first I thought, well, of course. And then later I thought, gee, have I done something wrong? And people are warning me. But I've since learned it's just really good advice. In the village where I live, at least 25% of the village is related to the other 25% of the village. And the advice I got was, well, you have to be very nice to everyone here, because if you get angry with the plumber, you'll never get a good plumber again. You know, that's it. You're done with plumbers. You'll have to go out of the county because, you know.
Right. Everyone's so connected. Word travels.
And in the past, I would have found that that would have put me off.
Right.
But what I know now living here is that that's incredibly good news. Because I only have to ask John, you know, where do I find, oh, you're going to want to work with so-and-so because he's the best. Mm-hmm. And in fact, so-and-so shows up and he is the best. Mm-hmm. So I find it easier to plug into what I always called in the States, the nice people network.
Yeah.
When you get that first nice person, they know all the other nice people.
And yeah.
That's certainly been my experience here.
Fantastic. And would you think you could have done it on your own, or do you think you needed help to do this?
Buy the house?
Yeah.
Oh, there's no way I could have done this on my own. I mean, no way. It was crystal clear to me after my... I mean, in the States, I was used to calling up an agent and saying, here are the houses I'm interested in. Help me find some more like this. And she would come pick me up and we'd drive around and we were done. Because there's the we're used to it in the States, mm-hmm. that there's this uneasy, somewhat permeable Chinese wall between buyer's agents and seller's agents, mm. often agents are on both sides of the deal. It's not like that here.
Mm.
Buyer's agents do not in any way, manner, shape, or form represent my interests as a buyer. Seller's agents do not represent my interests as a buyer.
That's right. It's buyer beware
in
Ireland.
It is very much buyer beware. And I needed somebody. You know, I remember I gave you 13 or 14 listings. And you were very good about inquiring deeply into what I was really looking for. And I had to kind of gear down and go, okay, she's really interested. I'm really going to go there with her. And we talked and talked and talked about it. And you came back and you said, okay, right. You don't want to go look at these five houses. Mm. And here's why. Mm-hmm. And then you explained to me, you're not going to be happy here because, oh, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, but there's a railroad out here, mm-hmm. close enough for you to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all these things. And this really is, I know it's a charming house and it looks like a lot of fun, but you're, you know, a 4-hour drive from the airport. And that's probably not going to work with you based on what all of which was true. Mm. So, and that's a relatively minor level of agent support, mm-hmm. but absolutely not something I was going to get from a seller's agent. Mm-hmm. And also just the getting to the houses and getting into the houses, that was an administrative task that I was not up to and had to be handled on a one-by-one-by-one basis with every property. Also the research you did on the backgrounds of the house and what to look for. For example, you know, you said at the beginning that I was not interested in a renovation, largely because you let me know what I was in for.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh yeah, Brefni, mm-hmm. I've done a ton of renovations. Mm-hmm. I'd love to. Well, let's look at these old ones. Mm-hmm. These look like fun. And you did not roll your eyes, as you were entitled to do, but gently talked me through things I would never have considered, like subsidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a thing in Ireland when you're buying a 400-year-old house that looks charming, a 400-year-old property. Anyway, I would have been in all kinds of trouble without you. I would have made it big, expensive mistakes.
It's good to hear of the value that you found in working with me. But I also know that at the point we had struck the deal to buy the property, and then there was the survey,
right.
and there was the legal paperwork, there was actually quite a few fiddly bits. We won't get into them in terms of the things to do with the house, but there were quite a few things.
Right.
And they needed absolute hand-holding and quite a lot of second opinions and third opinions to get the thing.
And solicitors and accountants,
yeah.
and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which in the US, when you do the deal, mm-hmm. it just sort of flows unless
yeah.
you hit a very serious sort of usually financial roadblock on the buyer's side.
Yeah.
It's different in Ireland. In fact, you don't even close technically on a property. What was it, like 4, 5, 6 months after
yeah,
you bought
it? Could be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the post agreement to sale phase was much wigglier
yes.
than I anticipated.
Yes, and you never know how wiggly it's going to be until you see the seller's paperwork and until you've done the actual structural survey.
Exactly.
And that throws up the next steps.
Yeah.
But they're only next steps. Everything is doable, but
yeah,
it does
absolutely.
Take some hand-holding and it can get more wiggly than you expect.
Yeah.
Colleen, I'm so grateful to you for taking the time and being generous enough to share your journey. Thanks so much.
You're so welcome, Brefni.